Babysitting. Hamilton Cree frowned with distaste. "How are we supposed to protect you if you invite your assassins to live with you?" he asked Jordan. They were still in the courthouse, sitting in a small conference room down the hall from the judge's chambers. Jordan had decided to talk to Cree in private before letting the security agent face the judge. "They won't be living with us," Jordan replied. "The three of them will be quartered in an apartment or a condo unit, together with a team of your unicorn people." "But they'll be with you all day?" "Yes, that's the plan." Cree shook his head. "It's crazy." "Hamilton, it's the only way I can see that will convince them I'm not part of an alien takeover of Earth. Freezing them is a lot simpler." "Be reasonable, Hamilton," Jordan pleaded. "Let's give it a try, at least. Until they figure out a way to murder you." Breaking into an almost rueful grin, Jordan said, "You'll be there to protect us." Cree huffed. Then he asked, "Who's going to pay for this?" Surprised, Jordan said, "Why, I will, I suppose. It's my idea, after all." "You can afford a full-up security team, 24/7? "Yes." "I don't like it." "But you'll go along with it, won't you?" Looking like a little boy facing a plate of broccoli, Cree murmured, "Yeah, I'll go along with it." "Good. Let's go tell the judge." As they got up from their chairs, Jordan added, "Thank you, Hamilton. I appreciate this." Cree nodded, but he was thinking, "And if those three nuthatches assassinate him, who's going to catch the blame?" "Me, that's who." Nick Matrenko looked suspicious as the judge explained Jordan's offer. Rachel seemed surprised and hopeful. Dee Dee downright delighted. "Let me get this straight," Nick said to Jordan, his youthful brow furrowed with disbelief. "You want us to be with you all day, every day? So that you can see for yourself what I'm doing. See that I'm not working for the New Earth people, and there's no alien invasion in the works." Almost sullenly, Nick said, "You could be doing that while we're sleeping." Rachel hissed, "Come on, Nick." Dee Dee actually giggled. Nervously, Jordan thought. Sitting behind her bulky desk, the judge fixed Nick with a stern gaze. "I don't think you realize what a favor Mr. Kell is willing to do for you. If you don't go along with it, you'll be found guilty of attempted murder, and I'll have to sentence you to the freezers, all three of you." "I guess it's better than freezing," Nick admitted almost sullenly. Jordan said, "I want you to see that my goal is to save Earth and those other worlds from the death wave. You can post a running commentary about what we're doing on your blog." Jordan could see the surprise on Nick's face. "You'd be willing to appear on my blog?" "Every day. We can even work out an agreement with the Otero Network for global coverage." Nick looked uncertain, wavering, but Dee Dee said, "We'd be helping you to get elected to the World Council, wouldn't we?" With a nonchalant shrug, Jordan replied, "I'm not interested in being on the World Council, but if that's what it takes to save our world and the others, then I'll accept the responsibility." A silence fell over the judge's chambers. Nick stood before her desk, looking somewhat hopeful despite himself, all eyes on him. Rachel looked pleading, Dee Dee buoyant. Off to one side, Cree's face was a noncommittal blank, but Jordan knew that the security agent thought the situation to be little short of murderously dangerous. Aditi spoke up. "I agree with Jordan," she said to Motrenko. "The best way to show you that the people of New Earth are no threat to you is for you to work with us, day by day." "For how long?" Nick asked. "Until you are convinced." Nick broke into a wary smile. "And when will you be convinced that I'm convinced?" Jordan answered, "Quite frankly, I don't know, but I'm willing to give it a try. Are you?" "You'll be on my blog every day?" "Every day," Jordan promised. Nick repeated, "It's better than the freezers." The judge got to her feet and said to her phone, "Tell the bailiff that we will reconvene in 10 minutes. Almost smiling, she said to Nick, "Mr. Kell is offering you your life. The least you could do is to show some appreciation."
"We appreciate it," Rachel blurted.
With obvious reluctance, Nick extended his hand to Jordan, who took it in his own.
"He what?"
Anita Halleck was in her chauffeured sedan, heading through Barcelona's downtown traffic from the World Council headquarters to her home in the outlying hills.
In the car's holographic viewer, Castiglione's handsome face looked somewhere between amused and disgusted. He's taken the would-to-be assassins under his wing. He's saved them from the freezers. The view changed to show the Boston courtroom, with the judge announcing that the three accused would be released into the custody of the man they had tried to murder. The cameras followed Kell and the trio of youngsters into the hallway outside the courtroom, where a phalanx of hastily assembled news reporters shouted questions at them. Abruptly, Castiglione's face replaced the scene in Boston. "He's actually going to become their guardian," the Italian shook his head. "What madness!" "Madness, my foot," Alex snapped. "It's a publicity stunt, pure and simple. And he claims he's not actively running for the council seat."
"Ah, politics," said Castiglione, as if that explained everything.
"He thinks he's so damnably clever," Halleck fumed.
"Perhaps too clever," Castiglione said. "I think he has outsmarted himself."
Walter Edgerton gave out a low whistle of admiration as he watched the scene outside the Boston courtroom. "He saved my kids from the freezers," Walt said to himself. "What a noble gesture. What a beautiful way to get the news media's attention." Walt got up from his sofa and went to the glass sliders that opened onto his patio. His apartment was 16 stories above the street, high enough so that he could see the Bay Bridge, and across the glittering water San Francisco's high-rise towers. The entire region had been rebuilt twice within the past two centuries. Devastating earthquakes had leveled the area, but despite the warnings of geologists and insurance adjusters, people and corporations had rebuilt along the same fault line. The triumph of hope over experience, Walt thought. "Well, I'm one of them," he admitted to himself. There'd been some talk of using the same alien technology that produced the energy screens to make buildings truly invulnerable to earthquakes, but Walt knew that invulnerable was a relative term. If the quake is powerful enough, nothing is invulnerable. As he stood gazing at the bay, he mentally counted off the seconds. 74-1000, 75-1000. At 82 seconds, his phone announced, "Mr. Castiglione calling from Barcelona." Walt nodded. "Put him on." He turned to see Castiglione sitting in an easy chair, a stemmed wine glass in one hand.
"Good afternoon, Rudy," he said, stepping back toward his sofa.
"Good evening, Walter," said Castiglione. "I see you're letting your beard grow in."
With a dramatic sigh, Walt replied, "Yes, I'll be hitting the road again in a few days, taking up my dingy old robe and mingling with the hoi polloi."
"Perhaps not," said Castiglione. "Have you seen the trial in Boston?"
"Yes. Kell's made a saintly gesture, hasn't he?"
"It could lead to his martyrdom, don't you think?"
Walt's brows rose perceptibly.
"I mean," Castiglione went on, "he's inviting the three who tried to assassinate him to live with him, travel with him, work with him."
"He's taken a big risk, isn't he?"
"Can you get in touch with your Mr. Motrenko?"
"I think so."
"Can you talk him into trying to destroy Jordan Kell once again?"
Walt rolled the idea around on his tongue for a few moments before answering. "Motrenko is an idealist, even though he doesn't realize it. Idealists make good assassins. They don't worry about the consequences." Castiglione said, "Shave off the beard and find where Kell plans to go. Go there and give your idealist a chance to act on his fears."